All right, buddy, Jimmy, alcoholic. Grateful we'll be alive and sober, and man, what a beautiful weekend this has been. Me and Tommy have just made a decision to change things up since we just heard what you said, and we're going to do a service manual workshop this morning.
Yes!
Because we know you're all excited about that. All right, thank God, right, Bill? Thank God. Well, it's funny, I had my service sponsor, when he gave a talk, he would always open up his talk by saying, you know, he would throw out a question. He would say, how did you hear about AA? Right? And he'd let you just ponder on that for a couple of seconds. And, you know, and then he would say, well, none of us were walking by a church basement and said, I think I'll go in there and get sober. Right? It might have happened to maybe one or two of you, but I doubt anyone has ever walked into an AA meeting just thinking, well, I wonder what's going on in that church basement. You know, it's always been something that has gotten us there, whether it's a committee, whether it's a treatment, whether it's a prison system, whether it's my Uncle Joe, I mean, whatever the case may be. So it's really, I always think about that, like, how'd I get AA? I met a complete stranger at Newark Airport who 12-stepped me, who was on with the facts about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he brought me to my first meeting. Here I am 38 years and change later. So that's my service talk. Right. Thank you. You're welcome. Which leads me into concept 9. Leadership. You know, we've been for a lot of you guys. I've been to so many men's retreats over the years, and you know, I think it, like, you know, I just think of some of the names in them, right? And they're all the same. I mean, you know, Tommy runs a retreat called Man Up. Right. He's going to a one that I did in Oklahoma next week called Outright Mental Defectives. We did a conference down in Florida. It was called Brothers in Our Defects. I mean, it's just the common theme. This is not, you know, we didn't get here on our virtues. That's for sure. Right. We're all screw ups. Right. And so, you know. I run a conference in New Jersey. It's a co-ed. Well, I run two things, but I do a co-ed retreat because we want the women involved too. And we just call it the Jersey Shore Big Book Retreat. And we're famous. We're real, real famous, yeah. We're so famous that there's a gentleman by the name of Bill Cleveland who came one year. And he said such an inappropriate joke in front of women that 20 of these women don't come back to our retreat. And Steve couldn't even, like, help him out.
You told me you wouldn't tell them. Well,
and I know you're going to want to know the joke. All I'm going to tell you is it had to do with oral sex in a vacuum. That was it. You figured that out.
That wasn't a joke. That's from the experience.
So I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about here. We're going to talk about we've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding. What the hell does that mean? You know, and I think our stories and what we've been talking about and the conversations have been great all weekend. It's, you know, I'm here and now I'm here. How did I get from here to here, right? And the simplicity of what we confuse and complicate all the time. You know, I walk into a meeting, I meet a man who helps me, you know, get involved, gets me in the middle of the herd of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, eventually I start working the steps, my life changes, I blow up my life, then I go through the steps again, and then I blow up my life, and then I hit walls, and life hits me in the face, and, you know, and I'm growing with every wall that I hit. That sounds crazy, but that's how it is. I'm growing, yeah. I know I shouldn't do that, but I'm doing that, right? So to grow, to learn more about me, learn more about my relationship with God, and then more importantly, how am I going to be effective? How am I going to take this out into the world and carry this message, and more importantly, practice these principles in all my affairs? I think one of the greatest warnings we have in the book when it says, you know, elimination of our drinking is just the beginning. A more important demonstration lies where? In our respective homes, the first place. So what's it look like in your house? And I think we've talked about that, you know, pretty much all weekend. And the conversations I've had with some of you guys, it's about relationships and dealing with wives and kids and parents and all that kind of stuff. You know, second place we take this is into our occupation, right? what's that look like in your life? You know, how are you showing up as a coworker or an employee or a boss or in that regard, right? And then the last place is, you know, what's it look like in my social life? Do I bring the principles of this into that? What's it look like when we hit the diner or the ice cream parlor after the Friday night meeting? And do we just go there and blast away on the speaker we just heard, who just drove 3 hours to get there, you know? I mean, so are we really practicing these principles in all our affairs? You know, I was in this meditation not too long ago, and it was a guided meditation, and I'm listening. And in between, in the middle of the meditation, the gentleman said, and now this is the thought of the day. I'm like, oh, where'd this come from? And he goes, it comes from Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein said, there's only two ways to live your life. One way is to live your life like nothing's a miracle. And the other way to live your life like everything's a miracle. You choose. You know, and I think about that. And like, you know, I'm looking at your faces right now, and I've heard a lot of your stories, and I know these stories, and there's miracles in this room all over the place. We shouldn't be here. You know, it's only through God's grace and through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that we have pretty good lives, even when the crap's hitting the fan. And here we sit in beautiful Southern California. And there used to be a holiday called Christmas. I haven't seen it here yet. I read about it in the books. So hopefully I'll see it tomorrow when I go back to the East Coast. But what a gift this has been. What a gift. I mean, you know, and to be invited, like, that's another thing with me. Like when he asked us to come, like, he made a mistake. Like, why is he asking us to come? Well, maybe Tommy, but why is he asking me to come, you know? You know, and there's always that self-doubt in myself, you know, like, what a, you know, this is the famous HBMS group. I heard about it. I'm very happy to find out it was all wrong. You're all guys are fucked up. You're a sick bunch, man, I'll tell you. But the miracle, how much do I take? I take the miracle for granted sometimes. I've been given a gift of sobriety. I've been given, there are people dying right now in Southern California that are dying of this disease. There are people in Southern California that don't even know there's Alcoholics Anonymous and a solution and answer to their problem. But I've been standing here all weekend telling you about what a screw up I am. You know, but I've been given a chance after chance after chance, God's love, God's grace, and I get to grow slowly, thank God. Thank God this is not an overnight matter, right? But more importantly, now it's about being, how effective am I as a sponsor, as a husband? I mean, the next thing we're going to talk about later on in the next session is about, you know, really about being a sober man. Because all those retreats, every retreat we've been to and you guys have been to, it's always about guiding us back to being what? Being a sober man. I'm not a screw-up. I have screwed up, but I'm not a screw-up. I have done bad things, but I'm not a bad person, right? I love you. I don't beat myself up. I was talking to young Chris before, you know, this, you know, trying to grow spiritually and beating yourself up, those highways never crisscross. Self-condemnation, self-loathing, that doesn't work in here, right? That's what the ego wants. The ego wants you out there. The ego wants us dead, but we'll settle for us drunk, as we say, right? So how can I continue to grow? And yeah, it starts with going to things like this. It starts being a member of a group. You know, it starts going through the steps, all that stuff, right? I think I heard Sandy Beach talk about this once before. You know, he says, you know, we're walking to church basements, and, you know, a lot of times the shades are up on the wall, and, you know, if you knew, you might read the shades on the steps, and you get to that 10th step, you continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it, right? And it sounds like we're just cruising along, and if you screw up, you know, you click your heels, and throw out, I'm sorry, and, you know, kind of move on with your day. And nothing could be further from the truth with that, especially when you read our literature. It says we have entered the world of the Spirit. We've had a spiritual experience as a result of the 9 steps, right? And he would talk about that there's a certain language, there's a certain feeling, there's a certain mojo that goes on when you're living in the world of the Spirit. And what he would say, and what I kind of believe today, is because that language is the promises after the 9th step, right? Now, there's a lot of ways to inventory your life. I found that out in Alcoholics Anonymous. We can go through that book, wherever my book is, and You know, I remember like when I first, you know, maybe some of you guys have done this, you open up the book and your sponsor says, open up to the blank page, and this is what you know about AA, nothing, you know, I mean, that really encouragement, you know, I mean, yeah, let's go, you know. But, you know, you got, and then, you know, in my case, you know, this guy made me write three questions down. He goes, I want you to ask yourself these three questions on a daily basis, but when you wake up in the morning, when you pray, and at night, I want you to answer these three questions. Number one, how are you showing up? How are you showing up as a son? How are you showing up as a husband? How are you showing up as a coworker? How are you showing up as a neighbor? How are you showing up a guy sitting in traffic? How are you showing up at the grocery store? How are you showing up as a human being today? Second question was, are you being accountable? Are you being accountable to your sponsor? Are you talking to your wife? Are you talking to your children? Are you talking to your boss? You know, are you accountable, or are you just withholding secrets again? And then the third question would be, are you being of service to God and others? And what does that really look like? So every morning I would wake up and I'd read that, and you know, at the end of the day, I'd ask myself that question. What I didn't understand is this guy was setting me up for a life of inventory. What I didn't understand is by asking myself those three questions and eventually going through the 12 steps, you know, I got to put the spiritual mirror to myself every day, not in a self-absorbing way, but in a way where I want to be free. And we've been given, Tommy just said it the other day, you know, this unfair advantage. We've been given a toolbox that if I apply these things to my life, man, I could be a free man in here with all the shit all over me, right? We can look at the bedevilments. Turn to page 52. Take those 8 bedevilments. Turn them into a inventory. Turn them into questions. Where do I stand with that? We got the 4th step. We got 10 steps. Spot check inventory. We got an evening review. You know, and I could do the same thing with the promises at the 12. After the 12 promises, to the 9th step, right? We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Have I? Have I really? Has self-seeking slipped away? We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. Do I really? Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Has it? Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Has it? The feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Has it? We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. Has it? We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. Has that happened? No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. Has it? You know, an old timer said to me, Jimmy, you got 1 foot so far into the past and 1 foot so far into the future, you're pissing all over today. Real spiritual stuff, you know, I like that. That's the kind of stuff I like. But that's the world of the spirit. And if I'm living in the world of the spirit, these are the things that are occurring. Now, if they're not, that's okay too, right? But acknowledge that that's not. So that's the inventory. So I pull my spiritual mirror out of my back pocket and I look at myself, where am I falling short with the promises after the 9th step? Now maybe it's just possible that, you know, I got to go through the steps again, right? Oh, I went through the steps 15 years ago. When I came in 34 years ago, I went through the steps. I think Peter said it last year, and I heard him say it a million times. Did you eat yesterday? Well, you're going to eat today. Why? Because yesterday's meal is not going to keep me full today. The experience I had 20 years ago is not going to keep me full today. So maybe, just maybe, if you're not experiencing those promises and not living in the world of the spirit and have had a spiritual experience and living in that beautiful sunshine out there, maybe, just maybe, it's time to go through the steps again. Is it possible that I'm still playing God in all areas of my life? Am I still trying to control and manage things and live under the delusion that life is controllable? Am I still stuck on that 3rd step that I'm the director of life? And that I still put conditions on relationships? And I still live with unreal expectations? All right? Is that still going on? Acknowledge it. Maybe I need to talk to my sponsor about that kind of stuff. You know? Have I finished that inventory that my sponsor got his size 12 boot up my ass every other week saying, are you done yet? Are you done yet? What am I procrastinating on? Which is nothing more than fear and slow motion, as you know. What's the fear that's blocking me from not finishing that amends that, I mean that inventory that I'm supposed to be writing? Right? Well, how about not having finished unfinished? How about having unfinished amends? You know, I had an unbelievable experience, but now I got a whole sheet, an 8-step list that I'm not even attacking yet because of fear. Because maybe I just don't have the money. Or maybe I'm just too afraid to go back to her. Or maybe knock on your door. So is that what's going on? Right? Does not finishing your amends have anything to do with you drinking again? And then finally, you know, more importantly, am I still holding on to secrets? And do I live under the delusion that I could walk through that spiritual archway, a free man, with a secret in my back pocket? And then I wonder why I'm not experiencing what you guys are experiencing and not experiencing these promises. So that's an inventory in itself right there, that I just need to pull the spiritual mirror out and ask myself some other questions. That I'm sitting here on a beautiful Sunday, a week before Christmas, you know, everything looks perfect, but I'm ready to eat a bullet with 22 years of sobriety in a parking lot this afternoon. Right? So our real purpose is to grow in an understanding of effectiveness, to continue to peel the onion, to continue to go within so I can go out and to be of service, maximum service to people in my life, not only in my home group and sponsorship and all that, but to my family. It's my job, and to bring these spiritual principles into all those places. I'm not going to give you a history thing, and you could talk to Jay about this. You know, Sam Shoemaker was an Episcopalian priest who really helped Bill Wilson write those 12 steps. You know, he was a very instrumental man running the Oxford Group of the Calvary Church down in New York City. And again, if you need real history on that, talk to Jay, I guess. Not Tommy, he knows nothing about that stuff. He's a heathen.
Yeah.
No, I'm only kidding. Love him. But I got a reading. I got a paper once from someone. I think it was a friend of mine, an archivist, and this thing came. It was an adapter from all the writings of Shoemaker, and it was titled "The Four Roadblocks to the Sunlight of the Spirit." And the first one is there a person, an institution, or a principle I won't forgive, be reconciled with, or accept? Is there a person, institution, or principle I won't forgive, be reconciled with, or accept? There's an inventory right there. Number two, is there a restitution I will not make or as yet haven't made? Again, back to the amends. What am I afraid of? Three, is there a defect of character, a personal shortcoming, or a doubtful pleasure I won't give up? That porn addiction, huh? That was Sandy Beach, I heard that said that. If you're thinking about porn, right before you close the door and lock it, make sure you bring God into that room with you. Right? Horrible. I didn't like Sandy very much. All that spiritual stuff he said. And then finally, is there something from my past I've held back when taking inventory and sharing from confession? Again, is there secrets going on in my life that I'm not talking about? So, you know, this idea of, you know, trying to grow and understand and you know, have it both ways is really a tough thing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous or in recovery in general. That I got to bare my soul. I got to empty out in order to get refilled, you know. That old story of, you know, like I said last night, mental defect, I forget the line, it's in How It Works, you know, but we all have the capacity to be, we could all recover if we have the capacity to be honest. You know, I heard a guy say one day, it's like, you know, it's like taking this cup of coffee, right? And I leave this coffee here and, you know, I just leave it there, right? For a year. And you guys come back here next year and you have new presenters up here and that coffee's still in there. What do you think that coffee's going to look like or feel like or smell like in a year? It's going to be moldy, stinky, I don't know, maybe just disgusting, right? But what we could do is take this coffee next year, this coffee cup, go to the sink and dump it out, wash it out, and we could refill it. It has the capacity to be refilled with new coffee. Well, the same thing with our lives. A lot of us come in here and our lives are just moldy, stinky, whatever you want to call it, right? And we all have the capacity to be refilled after we empty out of God's love. God's power, this way of life, you know, but a price has to be paid. And that's the destruction of self-centeredness. Am I willing to do that? Or am I here just for the coffee and the cookies? So that's really the challenge to me. And I'm just speaking to myself right now. Because this idea of trying to grow in God's image and trying to grow to be a sober man in society, it's not easy. So I get to do this stuff, right? I'm painfully aware sometimes that my ego, my mind, painfully aware that my mind still is driven by a lot of old ideas about a lot of things. You know, standing here with 38 plus years of sobriety, I still got a mind that wants to take me into the past. Still got a mind that wants to take me into the future. Woulda, coulda, shouldas, all the fears that are not even here yet. You know, and it's really hard to live in that. It's really hard to do this thing when you're living like that. And this idea of living in presence and living in quietness, I mean, this is why I really enjoyed Jay's meditations the last 2 days. I was telling Bill that, you know, sometimes you go to these things and you got a newcomer kid who just reads off a piece of paper. We'll do a 5-minute meditation and out the door we go. And thank him for that. But still, today, for some reason, your meditations really, really, truly hit me right here, you know. And this idea of living in the moment, you know, living present, acknowledging my wife, acknowledging things in my home, acknowledging the gifts of sobriety, the gift of life, the gifts. We've been given a precious gift. What am I doing with the gift? Right? Am I really growing as a man? Am I really staying course with all of life's hurdles? Right? So this idea of prayer and meditation become an important part of my life. And yeah, you know, in the beginning was, yeah, you know, God, keep me sober. And at the end of the day, thank you, God, for another day of sobriety. But my prayer life, the seeking of power, the seeking of trying to be a better man, the seeking of a relationship with a God that I don't understand sometimes, because I got to tell you, I'm still there's a 10-year-old little boy still inside of me. You know, I'm raised in that 1960 Catholic religion, and this is what I heard. You're going to hell for everything you've ever done. I've lived my life like a pirate. Really, what's God, why would God help a guy like me? There's still self-doubt in that. Not as bad as it was early on in my sobriety, but this, once in a while, that little thing just, that spiritual disqualification, as we call it. Why would God help a guy like me? Well, why not? Because here's the miracle. I look at you, right? The miracle of recovery, the miracle that we've been given. And so, you know, this Bill, you know, this guy Bill Wilson, you know, he knows he's working with a lot of dummies, so he outlines his 6 disciplines of how to live within a 24-hour period, right? And he starts at night. When we retire at night, right? Let's take a look at a day. Kind of like, how'd you show up today? Are you being accountable today? You know, we get those 9 questions in there. You know, the guy that goes to bed angry wakes up angry. I've gone to bed a lot angry, and I've woken up a lot angry. And now I'm given an opportunity of if I'm even doing any kind of spot check inventory throughout the day, that I can go to bed peaceful. Isn't that a miracle? Going to bed without your head spinning? How many of us have gone to bed exhausted and you can't fall asleep? How many of us have twisted and turned in bed all night long, and then when we wake up in the morning, we're exhausted, right? Because the mind just does not stop. The mind just keeps going. So we get an opportunity every day to take a look. Let's just take a look. Let's pull out the spiritual mirror. What kind of man was I today? Was I a sober man or was I a lunatic? And a lot of times I'm a lunatic. But I'm given opportunity day in and day out to take a look. And not in a self-absorbing way, right? But in a way where I can get free. And then, like, you know, we talked about on awakening. You know, what does that look like? We consider our plans for the day. Not what I got to do. Yeah, I got to go to work. I got to go to the gym. I got to go to the grocery store. You know, we know all that stuff. But more importantly, who am I going to be today? Am I going to be the savage from yesterday? Or am I going to really try to practice these principles in all my affairs today? You know? So that's the question I have to walk out the door. And I love what you said today, and I talked about that too. I meditate with my wife every day. It's been a gift to sit with her quietly and listen and do a meditation together and feel our spirits connect. Right? And then to be able to just talk about what's going on. And not like a 2-hour talk, just, and off we go, face the day. One of the best things I've ever been encouraged to do is to meditate with my wife. I love it. I love it. You know, and then thinking about our day, you know, we get that word pause. How many of us pause, you know? Danger coming. Danger, Will Smith. Danger, danger, pause, you know? And we just blow through that stop sign, right? And we're a train wreck within an hour. You know, but we're given clear-cut ideas of really how to deal with the things that are going on in my day by pausing. Take a breath. Push away from life. Right? Push away from the table. Right? Breathe. Bring God into this. Call my sponsor. Call Jay. Call Bill. Call somebody. Right? Call one of your road dogs. Right? This is what's going on. Right? And then, you know, and Bill goes on, you know. You guys can correct me, but I believe it was, what's his name? The guy from out here. The guy everyone's dropping his name all the time.
Chamberlain.
What you're looking for, you're looking with, is that what the statement was? That this fundamental of idea of God is deep down in every man, woman, and child. But it's my job to clear that away, to clear the channel away, right? It's like I said the other day, you know, there's freedom, guys, right out that door, right into the sunlight of the Spirit. But there's a lot of chairs, a lot of dirt, there's stuff here that we have to clear away on a daily basis to get out there and be free. And growing and understanding of God's will and how I execute that in my life on a daily basis. So there's marching orders when we leave these things. Yeah, we had a lot of laughs this week. We busted chops all weekend. I love that stuff. I love that stuff more than anything. But there's a seriousness and a depth to this that I got to really pay attention to. I think it was Richard Rohr said, I wrote it down here, he likes to say that we feed the beast, the mind, and we feed it with all our anger, our judgment, and our fear. You know, I don't know about anyone else, but I was like a pendulum when I came in here. You know, like this, my emotions, right? One day I love her, the next day I hate her. The one day I love my job, the next. And what I've learned to do in here with your help and with God's help is to get that pendulum from stop swinging so broadly to a place where, you know, there's a little wiggle, because that's life. But to a place where Bill calls it being right-sized. And I've experienced something that I never thought I'd be able to experience in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's called emotional sobriety. That my sobriety is not based on conditions of out there, money, property, prestige, any of that stuff. It's been about building a relationship with God. And I wish I could say I did this perfectly. You know, Bob says it all the time, you know, we're all human beings on a spiritual walk. Sometimes we're going to lose focus on the walk. And our spiritual, and our humanness gets us, right? But what he also says is, you know, real spiritual warriors walk towards their problems, not avoid their problems. And the path to God is not a straight path, you know. If we were down on the Pacific Coast Highway and we said, hey, there's God up at that retreat house, you know, we wouldn't go straight up. It'd be just like these roads out here. It's trails and there's potholes and there's landmines and it's life. But if I'm willing to keep walking up that trail, I'm going to get to God, right? I think one of the greatest lines we have is in We Agnostics, when he ends at that chapter, he says, you know, as we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. The more I get rid of the debris, the more I get out of the way, the more I get closer to the door and go out into the sunlight, the Spirit, I'm going to start experiencing this power called God. And my life gets recreated in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The guy who's dying, the guy who's who is just a total mess coming here on day one, we see him in a year and something has happened. There's a transformation in him. And that's available to everyone in this room. And I think that's why we come to these things. It's not for the chicken last night. That's a damn sure. Nothing against the chickens. But AA chicken gets old after a while, you know. I thought it was a pork chop, to be honest with you. Maybe the chickens are different in California. I don't know. So again, you know. deep down in every man, woman, and child is this fundamental idea of God. I got a responsibility to myself. And that's the clear way to wreckage of my past. You know, and to continue to seek this power with the desperation of a drowning man. I like this life. I like this sobriety thing. I like being with you guys. I like laughing. I like having fun and doing things that we do in sobriety. Right? But, like the third step says, I got to constantly remind myself that I'm not running the show anymore. I got to get it out of the director's chair. And that's the hard part. I got to stop living under that delusion that life is controllable and that I'm the director of life. You know, and stop doing these, you know, unreal expectations, conditions on everything. No, like the emotional sobriety, you know, Bill Wilson wrote in that famous essay, you know, like, he came to the understanding that his life is dependent upon his relationship with God, not that stuff out there. And as a result of that, you know, kind of a free man with all that. But that's a one day at a time type of thing. So this topic of growing and understanding effectiveness, I don't even know if I touched it. I don't really care if I touched it. I just know that, you know, we could tell funny stories and jokes and all like that. But, you know, I woke up this morning and I'm in California, and I am so grateful for this way of life. We're going to talk about something else on the next session, I know that, but I am so grateful for this life because a guy like me doesn't deserve something like this. A guy like me doesn't deserve to enjoy California and your fellowship and your friendship and the conversations we had throughout the weekend. This has been a gift. It's a priceless gift for a guy like me, so that's all I have. Thank you.
Morning, gentlemen. I'm Tommy T. I'm an alcoholic. Hey. And my heart is full. I'd like to say a little prayer just to get myself centered. Something that a guy in Vegas showed me a long time ago, and I've been using it a lot whenever I'm jammed up throughout the day. When I pause, if I pause, I will say this, and usually by about the fourth line, that fear, that anger that I feel just leaves me. So it goes something like this. I am the place where God shines through. He and I are one, not two. I need not worry, fret, or plan. He wants me where and as I am. If I remain relaxed and free, God will work his plan through me. Amen. So, when Jimmy picked this topic, growing and understanding and effectiveness, I said, Jim, you got to go first. I don't even know what you want to talk about. And Jimmy just did a half hour for us, and I still don't know what he wants to talk about. But I love my guy, though. I love him. Don't let the stuff that goes on between us be anything but love.
What a team.
I don't know. But when he was talking, you know, if you're here for a few years, you got your journey. If you're here more years, you got a longer journey. It's been a long journey for me. 30 years, I never dreamed. I didn't want to stay in AA. I was going to come in and show you guys it doesn't work. You know, I was going to try it one more time. And then you guys got me. Something clicked. Something shifted. There's been tons of those shifts. They're not little shifts. They might think, you know, you might feel it. They're seismic. They're big geological events, man. When guys like us start to actually change behaviors that you've done your whole life, it's huge. So we have that bond-burning experience, and I hope everybody here, except for the very new guys, maybe you're in the middle of it now, have written that inventory and saw some real truths and made all, Jimmy stressed that, all of your amends. I remember when I was balking on two amends. One was with Staten Island Cable for watching porn and every Mike Tyson fight for free on a hot box. And the other one was that I stole a drill from a construction site because the guy wasn't paying me a high enough hourly wage, and I was entitled. And I just sat on those two for a year. And I was sponsored by Joe at the time. And Joe said, Tom, what's up with those last two of them? I just haven't gotten around to it. I'm killing it, sponsoring 10 guys, you know, in the service structure, good home group member, all this. And he said, is it because you're afraid to finish anything in your life, Tom? Challenge accepted. You know. So I tried to reach this guy that was the construction thing. Now, I didn't know this because this amends got made maybe 4 or 5 years ago at a wake. I called this guy 3 times. I sent him a letter. He wouldn't meet with me. And what he thought is I wanted to beat him up because of the... Come on, man. I'm in my 60s. I ain't beating anybody up. You know, when he saw me at the wake, it was cool. And I finally got to make that. But I remained willing all those years. But I wrote a letter to Staten Island Cable, and I was in fear about it. I'm like, man, I'm going to be the first guy in AA that does time for a hot box. You know, I'm like, I, that's where my mind goes. And I got the most wonderful letter back from them. Thank you for being a valued customer. And, you know, please don't ever do it again. And just, you know, it was like, and if you still have it, please get rid of it. I didn't have it, you know. And it was just so silly. But then I'm at an 11-step meeting with my sponsor. And he said, you know, I sponsored this guy, and he was sitting on some amends. And, you know, I perked up. It's about me. And he said he finished that, and I noticed a shift in his 11-step nightly review. He said, now all of a sudden, guys are asking him to sponsor him like crazy. He said, we don't know what's good and bad for us here. We don't know what effect it's going to have on us. But the directions tell us to do it, so we do it. And he said, he's an attractive member of AA now. And he wasn't that way. And I was like, what do you mean I wasn't that way? I take the negative out of that statement, you know. But it just shows me I know nothing about this journey. I think I know less now with 30 years. I really don't. I don't know. I know Sandy Beach used to say, and I loved it. He said, this is the map. It's not the treasure. I made the big book the treasure for a long time. A lot of mechanical work. I was very good. I was a technician. I got great handwriting. I told you. It's just like everything was perfect columns. I mean, I'm good, you know. And I look up the dictionary. I use a 1939 dictionary. Yes, I do. You know, I do all that stuff. I highlight, I underline, I double star. But if there are words on the pages, they're not getting your heart. It's a program of the heart. When we touched our heart yesterday, what was it, Mike? What are you, whimpering like a little chihuahua over there? You know, I was like, yeah. Yeah, I'm opening up. I don't know what's happening, but it's good. I like the effect produced by God. It's just something I thought I was excluded from. So what's the practice look like? Over the years, you know, so much technical stuff, more information. More information's the answer. Read that book. Read this book. Eckhart Tolle. Read Merton. Read this. Read that. I read them all, and I love them, and I got to tell you, fellas, my intellect's not that great. I read a guy like Merton, and it's just over my head. I got to read one paragraph 4 times. I'm in it all week, you know, and I still don't really have, I think, what he was saying. I think I got an idea, but, you know, I'd like to have some question and answers with him. But it's just wonderful stuff. And, you know, when I'm reading that stuff, it hit me. I'm trying to connect with God. I'm trying to grow in understanding effectiveness. I don't know if I am. Not at the time, I don't know if I am. I know, fellas, standing here before you 30 years sober, I'm a different man. I think it's the reason I'm able to talk about the things that hurt me the most in an open setting, because I'm not that man. The man telling the story is not the man that did that stuff. I was just in a different spot. You guys know it. We've all been there. So how does it happen? Is there a button you can push? I don't think so. But I know you have to be willing to seek. And I've been pretty willing to seek. I've had to have those bouts with self-will and those years, not days, years, off the beam. But then God always knows how to get me back. You know, introduce the porn again. Introduce the women again. I think that's the treasure. Start gambling. Oh, that'll bring you down quick. That's a lose-lose. I've done it all. That second bottom was brutal. But I continued to do the mechanics even through that. And then that led me to seeking more. So after that second bottom with 10 years, I got heavy into the service stuff. I couldn't get enough of our history. I think I've read every conference-approved literature, all the conference-approved literature. I was highlighting and underlining that. I could even, you know, I could take a spiritual book and highlight it and ruin it, but, you know, but I was doing it. And I think there's something to be said about the consistency here. It doesn't matter if you feel your prayers are connected in the morning. Say them. You're getting bored with them? So I have prayers at the front of my big book, a couple that I've written, my 3rd step, my 7th step prayer, others that I've been given. I almost refuse to memorize them. Pretty much after years of reading them, they do. But when I read a prayer, I read it slowly. I can stop. I can think about it. Then I can go back to the next line. I can't do that in my head. So I parrot prayers. I can get through the third step, the seventh step prayer, you know, and the Our Father in, I don't know, 2 minutes. I don't even know what I just said. It's not connected. But when I seem to read it slowly, it connects. So I made that shift years ago. It had a big difference in my life. And then when I was confident enough spiritually in myself to say prayers, when I pray with my wife, we say prayers. We don't say set prayers. She'll say one, I'll say one. It's wonderful. We're shy there. We let life get in the way. But I'll tell you, as a married man with 4 kids and 3 grandkids, we have better days when we do it. And I'm going to go home and I'm going to ask her if she would like start to do a coffee in the bed. We called Bill a couple weeks ago. Karen said, oh, we're in bed having coffee. I said, oh, there's a visual, you know. We were laughing, but we got off the phone and said, we should do that. And then I heard it again this weekend, and I want to do that with my wife. I love my wife. And if that's going to help my marriage, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to try to connect that way with another person. I'm not afraid of connecting that way with another person. She knows everything about me. Good, bad, and the ugly, you know. So I want to pick that up. See, there's things, I don't care where you are on this journey, there's things you can pick up if you're listening, if you're open to it. There's no perfect, I don't think there's any perfect way to do this. I know there's men that do certain practices that give them results that I would like to do, and I do it, and I don't get those results. So where does a guy like me take that? Oh, there's something wrong with me. No, try it again. Change it up. So I'm from the school. I came through like in that mechanical way. The nightly review is a big deal to me. I write all the time. I'm just a guy that does it. The power of God comes through the pen, and I'm not even thinking a certain way. I pray, I do an inventory, and then I read it, and I say, did I just write that? And the true answer is no, I didn't write that. God needed to show me some truth. So, but I get stale in that mechanics. So using the big book, which is my go-to, and I'll always do it, every now and then over these last few years, at the urging of sponsorship and seeing how all the guys further down the road that are doing it, you change those questions up. So you keep the same thing, but it's not just was I resentful, was I selfish, was I dishonest or fearful. I combine that to one question now. Where was I with that? And then I'll write specifically on the fear I had or whatever it was. But then it's not, do I owe an apology? And was I kind and loving towards others and this and that? So I change it up a little bit. My second question is, did I spend time with God today? And it changes the language I use to write it. So it changes, it makes the inventory fresh to me. It makes it useful to me. The third question is, was I good to, did I take care of my health and my body today? Because I'm a 2-for-3 guy in the 3 sides of the triangle. I could be going to the gym 6 days a week, eating well, doing all that stuff when I was younger, but the spirit's off, or I'm not helping anybody. Now in older years, I'm helping everybody I can. And I'm doing pretty well in our program. But man, I'm weighing 275 and I'm thinking about buying slip-on shoes because I'm out of breath. I'm out of breath when I'm tying those shoes, you know. I don't like the way I look. It's almost like, Bill's got his slip-ons on, I love it. It's just one of those things. It's almost like I self-sabotage myself without knowing it. But we can change these things up. You don't have to be so mechanical. Mechanics are good in the beginning to get that foundation. I think they are. But you got to break away from that. You got to start another journey. You know, another question that I ask now is, how was my soul and my spirit today? 2 different questions. My soul I look at as my internal condition. Was I peaceful inside? Was I quiet inside? Was I disturbed at any point in the day? Because it doesn't always rise to resentment or a fear, but something might set me off. That'll go down there. But how is my spirit? And I changed this up about 6 months ago. I can tell you for 6 months, my spirit has been full of gratitude since I've retired. I have more time to spend with God now. I'm not distracted by the monetary stuff. It's okay. I'm a rich man, not because I have a lot. I'm just starting to want less. And that is a freedom. And now, if I could get my wife on that page, you know, I'd be doing a lot better with that. But, you know, but it's just, and then I look, and the last question I ask myself, what could I have done better today? And are there any corrective measures that need to be taken? That's where we grow. Being willing to look at them, even the small mistakes we make. How else are you going to get better unless you look at that or talk to your sponsor about that and then take the actions to correct that behavior? Otherwise, you're just going to be keeping going back. And I was speaking to somebody today and just keep saying, I'm sorry to my wife. I don't want to do that. I want to be a better man. We're going to talk a lot about that in the last session. But I do things like that. And the meditation, oh, you know. I love Steve Lee tells a story about our friend Howard. And he says, Howard, you know, can I get a couple of minutes of your time? I'm really having trouble with meditation. He says, yeah, come up to my room. It excites Howard. You know, he's like, yeah, come on up. And they get up there and he says, well, what's the problem with your meditation, Steve? And he says, well, I sit down, I just can't clean my mind. So, you know, I'm not really. Oh, so it's not really that you're having a problem with meditation. You're having a problem with the willingness. And I was like, that's true. Because meditation, for a guy like me, it's not easy. I don't care how long you're sober. My mind's a train wreck. My mind reminds me of when they try to unmute everybody on Zoom and you try to pray at the end of the meeting. It's like, that's what I wake up with every morning. So what I do now is I do a series of readings before it. I've always read something. I have read the 24-hour-a-day book, and there's some corny shit in there, you know. But I've read that almost every day of my sobriety for 30 years. And I have it, and it was given to me from a guy that was in the outpatient program with me. It's just a little black book, and I just love it. And I would read that, and that would suffice for a while. And then I'd add another book to it. So right now I'm doing, and I rotate them. So I have three or four books. And when I've read one for 4 years, it goes to the bottom or out, and something else replaces that. And what I find is it's about the third reading that my mind starts to quiet, that I really start to pick up on what's in that book. So now, you know, I'm starting with the 24-hour-a-day book. I go to Timmy Hyland's book, The Last Quarter, which I love. It's just wonderful. It's where I'm at. And then I was doing Don Major's Stumbling in the Right Direction for a while. And then I had The Power of Now, an all-time classic favorite of mine by Eckhart Tolle. And I would read those, and I just go through. Then I go into meditation with the book that touched my heart the most. Totally different experience. I'm not trying to quiet my mind. I'm trying to think and contemplate on what I read. It's a different experience for me. You know, I think that quieting the mind was more Eastern stuff and stuff like that. But in 1939, they were doing a lot of contemplative prayer. That works for me. Guided meditation works for me. Jay sitting in front of the room and giving an idiot like me specific directions works for me. And I always have these experiences. And these last 3 or 4 years, fellas, I'm crying all the time. I went to take a picture of the cross last night. And I saw it all lit up. Me and Jimmy were down there. And I take out my camera. I want to get the full thing, and my camera's all blurry, and I'm like rubbing it. And I realized, Jesus Christ, I'm crying again. You know, like I can't even take a picture. I don't know what I'm supposed to do, Jesus Christ. I gave him credit. It was like, but to me, listening to Jimmy's talk this morning, being with you guys all weekend, I think I'm growing in understanding and effectiveness. I think God's opening up channels that I didn't know I had. I love Alcoholics Anonymous and I try to be a good member all the time, but I fall short. I have a lot of guys that ask me for help and sometimes I don't return a phone call or something. I beat myself up over it. Beat myself. Make 10, 11, 12 phone calls in a day, but I didn't make the 13th. My sponsor laughs at me, you know. He says, well, you know, tomorrow's another day, Tom. You can call him tomorrow, you know. And And I'm like, yeah, if he's still alive. Ebb and flow. Sometimes you're crying with God out of the statue, and other times you're beating yourself up. But I think those are reducing themselves, and the crying with God is getting better. So I think there is some growth there with that. You know, I write inventory, like Jimmy said, every couple of years. I think I've done the steps, the first 9 proposals, I don't know, 11, 12 times in 30 years. You know, every time there's an election cycle, I get busy. You know, so that just happens. But there's other things. And the fourth step's a great tool. I think it's one of the greatest tools we're given, because you get some clarity on those bigger issues. And sometimes the minute stuff comes up. But that 11th step, you know, I heard an analogy of our 11th step and the fourth step and all, and 10 and 11, where the 10th step is like if you're from a city, you know, you have that high-rise building, and you got the netting up on top. Right? Nobody's worried. There's only guys doing some prep work up there. But if they drop a hammer from the 80th floor, it's a big deal by the time it hits the ground. Somebody's dying. So they got a net up there to catch that. But if those nets don't catch it, there's the sidewalk bridging. That heavy metal structure with the big boards on top, that's going to stop it. That's our 11th step. The 10th step is as we go through our day. Those are all tools that we grow from. So the message here for me today is don't settle. You know, 10, 11, and 12 are not extra credit, fellas. Doing half your amends is not the deal. Finish those amends. Work a program of 10, 11, and 12. That's where we grow. Because I tell you, I would not be sober if I was doing what I was doing in year 1 through 5. 5 through 10, 10 through 15, it just wouldn't happen. I was out of my mind back then. I think it's a miracle I didn't drink or do something else through that time. I did every other bad behavior. I can't live like that anymore. And I've said it a couple times this weekend, and we're going to talk about it in our last topic. I really have a desire to be a better man. And it's not because I'm a goody two-shoes. It's because I've had my day in the bowel being a bad guy. And I just want to be free of that. I think there's always more freedoms here. There's more things to learn here. There's better practices to do, different practices, not even better. Get next to those old guys that have been doing it longer than you, and just, I love it. I love when I'm the junior member in the front row at a retreat or a convention or something. That is just the best. I love that Danny Brown in Texas calls me baby boy. Oh, I used to think that way too, baby boy. You know, it's just why I put triple X on my name tag at Usual Suspects last year, you know, and Danny was there and he said, I used to brag when I only had 32, you know, and I need that. I need you guys, the front row. Okay, I need those guys. And that's how I grow. They give me tips. They stay with me. They tell me you're doing good. Don't back off. Don't come off the gas. And I talked a lot about two of my sponsors this weekend, George, who took me through, and then Joe, who I had for 25 years. But in this remaining time we have together, I got a guy, Harold Long, now. He's coming to you next year, and I'm going to try to do it without talking to my wife, but it might get screwed up. I'm going to commit to come back here next year and spend time with you guys. Because I'm thinking, Bill, we can hook the wives up, and Cheryl would love to come along. So I think that might be my out. But he's a trip. And he'll sit up here, and he'll tell you a humble story of everything, but I'm prepping you for what you got coming next year. He is the busiest member of Alcoholics Anonymous that I know. I think he may be doing cocaine. What Michael does with caffeine and Red Bull, Harold's natural. It's insane. And I would have never picked him as a sponsor. I prayed, he called, I asked. And he pushes me. He pushes me. And I need that. I need a guy that's going to tell you. And I want to tell you one thing that he said to me just recently through a consideration of another man. So I have three men in my life that I bounce things off. Jimmy's sitting here. I have this guy, four, Jimmy, and I have Bob. I have Harold is my sponsor. But I share inventory with one of my sponsor brothers that I had for 25 years, this guy John in Ohio. And he's just got the gift of consideration. He's just real good at it. He listens to an inventory, he has 7 days of inventory, and then he's able to give you a consideration that happened Monday, Wednesday. He remembers, I don't know if he's using notes, I haven't asked him, but he's very good at it. And he gave me a consideration after a week of perfect inventory. Not a cloud on the horizon. It was the week of St. Thomas, right? I mean, I was helping everybody, no riffs, no nothing. And he said, that's great, Tom, I have a consideration for you. So right away, I'm like, considerations usually come after a bad week, you know? And he said to me, you mentioned that your wife takes those grandkids to church every week. He's a very religious guy. And I said, yeah, she does. He said, well, if you're truly a man of service, wouldn't it be nice to go with her and help her with the kids and show your grandkids that you love God too? And I said, where the did that come from? We laughed, and he said, are you willing to take the consideration? I said, John, I love you. I wouldn't be on the phone with you every Tuesday at 12 o'clock if I didn't value what you tell me. I will do it for 6 months. And he said, that's wonderful. So I tell Harold this. A month later, talking with my wife, I'm not making communion with them. I'm not doing that. And this is not a religious pitch, believe me. I say the set-aside prayer before I walk into church. That's where I'm at. And but I'm going up, or I'm just going up with my arms crossed. Those of you that might know the routine, and he's just giving me the thing, you know. I'm like, I'm not taking the host, because you're supposed to have done confession. So I'm trying to follow the rules, right? And I said, Harold, I'm going to go with him and do a confession. He said, that's wonderful. I mean, Harold lights up. He's a pastor. He never pushed religion on me for the first 4 years of our sponsorship. Never said anything to me. But now I've opened the door. And he said, Tommy, I want you to know one thing. As a pastor that's heard many confessions and things like this, you walk in there and you have a conversation with that gentleman. And he said, and don't you go in there from a place of spiritual deficit. He said, you're two children of God. He said, because when he hears what you're about and how you live your life, he's going to wish he had more of you in his congregation. Because we get to listen to guys doing the same stuff over and over and over again, and they come in to say a couple of prayers and get absolved. You have to make amends. You have to do the corrective measures. You have nothing to worry about there. And I got to tell you, fellas, I wasn't really nervous about it at all. But our priest is an older guy, cute guy, you know, just a nice man. And he asked me, do I know anything about it? I said, no, I don't know anything about this. And he said, when was the last time that you were in confession? I said, Father, I knew that question was coming. And I think it's about 55 years ago. He looks at me and says, oh, boy. So he said, do you know the sacrament or what the act of contrition? I said, no, Father, I don't. He said, well, would you mind if I ask you some questions? Said, go right ahead. Fire away, Father. He said, is there anything that's really heavy on your heart? And I've told you guys some of the stuff that's heavy on my heart. He told me about that. He just nodded. And he said, now, Tom, is there any sexually based stuff that's... I said, Father, it was the 70s and the 80s. I was doing drugs. Yes, there's a lot. And I went into like two stories briefly. One was, I said, well, you would probably refer to them as a transgendered person now. And he said, oh, boy. So I made this little guy say four times, oh, boy. And then he said to me, Tommy, you live some life. The fact that you're helping all the men that you do, you know, because we had a two-hour conversation. He said, the fact that you help all these guys and that you haven't had a drink in 30 years and you still go to those meetings and you're doing what you're doing. He said, I want you to say one Hail Mary and one Our Father. And I said, I can do that, Father. I walked out and I said, I was not in a spiritual deficit there because of you guys. I don't know where this journey is going to go, but I do want to tell you one thing. The next month, he gave me a wink when I made communion. And the sermon was on a disciple, Matthew. That's my son's name that was adopted, you know. So I think I'm going to go get confirmed, and I'm going to take Matthew as my middle name. You know, I heard it clear in church, so I'm not going to deny what I heard. I don't know if I threw it down there in the stomach to try to make myself feel better, but I'm not going to deny that. Because my heart is open, and it's opened more in my 60s. I'm going to do the way I'm pulled to do. I'm not looking for any outcome from it. I'm not looking for my absolution for that. I don't think that'll ever go away. But it's a great experience. Just don't shut yourself down to anything that could come up. To me, going to church is like out there. You know, don't be afraid of it. If Jay asks you to do one of the Jay principles, do it. That's a little woo-hoo, you know, I can be out there. But why not? Don't close any channels. Don't close any channels. Don't settle, fellas. For the guys here with some time, that's what I'm telling. Don't settle. Allow yourself to grow in understanding and effectiveness, whatever that looks like. Because, man, it keeps getting better. One of my favorite lines in the book says, the greatest years of our existence lie ahead. It's as true for the guys counting days as the guys with 40 years. It's the best. Thanks, fellas.